RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Let's go, Yankees!
Oh, Jesus. Why are you doing that crap? That's ridiculous.
Hey, listen, don't you have... You are a native New Yorker. I know that your Mets don't have anything really to write home about, but come on!
Listen, no. Let me tell you a little story, okay? By the way, this is Beans.
Okay.
Let me tell you a little story real quick before we start the show. So just recently, some people that I know were having a conversation about David Wright and what a great asset he was for the Mets and how wonderful he was and, you know, how he's going to be missed and they need to retire his number, blah, blah, blah. And a Yankee fan, an entitled, self-loathing jerk of a Yankee fan, who I know personally, so if they hear this, we'll be upset. Comes on and starts saying how Jeter was so much better, and the Yankee, and you know, how could you even say that about David Wright? And the Yankees have much better players, and just being like, just let the Met fan enjoy their jewel.
Yeah,
I mean, really, you know, it's people like that that give all of you a bad name.
Eh.
Eh. See, there it is. It's right there. The entitlement oozing off of you.
Every team has their dummies. Every team, no matter what, it doesn't even have to be sports. Every group of people have their dummies. But
more on the Yankee side of things than any other team outside the Phillies, anyway.
Hey, when you're the best, you know, once you reach the top, people are going to start throwing rocks at you more than anything else.
Yeah, but so. It's not that. It's them throwing rocks at other people. Apparent reason.
Have bragging rights. You have bragging rights.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you go around just poking people just for the sake of being a jerk.
I don't invoke bragging rights only until there's a victory. When there's a victory, then because I don't want to get caught with my pants down. I don't want to go bragging and flaunting and all this stuff and then all of a sudden lose and get held holding the bag. I wait very patiently until I can throw it in somebody's face, and then they have to wait 6 months until the next season to say something again.
You do want to get caught with your pants down.
To other things, though.
You can't say that with a straight face, that you don't want to get caught with your pants down, mister. Keep your pants off.
Like I said, there's more. There's never going to be a time where I'll ever be able to run for office anywhere. I wouldn't be able to run for local librarian. So, yeah.
Is that an elected position now?
I don't think so.
Oh.
If there was, though, I wouldn't be able to run for it. Can't. Too much history. Too much search history.
Oh, goodness. What a week it's been, Frank. Again, I feel like we just left off on Friday and we were all fired up. We did a whole hour on Kavanaugh and we could have done another hour.
Hey, well, listen, a couple minutes ago, we just got the news about the cloture vote.
Yes. 51-49.
51-49 with one key defection, and it wasn't Jeff Flake.
Murkowski.
What the hell does Dianne Feinstein have on Murkowski, the wilting flower?
Yeah, we were just talking off before we came on there about how Bombard's Body Language did a video on the Feinstein or Steen or whatever you want to call her, Skeletor, Murkowski, conflict. Where she had her arm up next to her, like basically domineering her, and Murkowski was like shrinking down to like meet Feinstein's gaze. She's a weak person.
No, there's something going on here, especially since she really looked like she was going to vote yes because of all of that infrastructure money that would have possibly flowed to Alaska. For cell service. I forgot what it was.
Yeah, it was like cell phone tower or something.
Thought that was going to be the key there. But, we'll see. We'll see. As of right now, all I care about is as of right now, we're not going to need Mike Pence's tie-breaking vote. So it's a little bit less stress, but damn.
What do you think the Collins presser is going to be? And you know what? Honestly, we're talking about it like it hasn't happened yet, but in all seriousness, like this is broadcast after. So what was Collins' press conference?
Who? Susan Collins?
Yeah, she's supposedly having a 3 p.m. press conference.
Today?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm nervous because what does a cloture vote mean? I don't know. There's a way that this could be used in a very deceptive kind of trap setting way.
How so? You know?
Well, think about it. If there are snakes in the grass that are willing, and I could just be paranoid, but, you know, in the current state that we're in where you really can't trust anybody, I don't know what else to do at this point. But, you know, you have people can pretty much just say, all right, well, let's vote them through so that we can have a final floor vote and get this over with. You know, people like Susan Collins and Jeff Flake can just as easily say, yeah, let's put them through on cloture so that when the floor vote comes through, boom, two no votes that are irreversible. And all of a sudden you're there holding your you know what in your hand. And that's just it. I mean, it could just as easily be used in a jujitsu kind of a way.
Well, Bongino's been talking about what would happen if that happened. And he's saying that Kavanaugh, it would be a ridiculous fire up for the midterms. And then Kavanaugh would be renominated after the midterms and it would like sail through with no question.
Well, that's if, you know, the Senate majorities hold and or grow, which I'm hoping.
You need to have that pollster on again, like
Richard
now.
He's coming back. He's coming back. And not only that, but I'm thinking about doing a really, really awesome night of coverage on election night. I'm thinking about staying live until midnight and just having every last person I know come on and do guest spots.
Oh, shoot. I'm down.
Hell yeah. I would love to have Richard Barris calling in every hour on the hour to start talking about, you know, calling seats and projections and all that. Because the thing here is this. Right now, I feel even more momentum than I did before 2016.
Yeah.
Lead up to 2016, we are sitting there looking at all these ridiculous polls, 98% chance of Hillary winning, 95% chance of Hillary winning, this and that, 13% gap in this state, 14% gap in this state, insurmountable odds. And it just felt weird to me because I'm like, how the hell could this be true? When I know, then I see that nobody's showing up to her cafeteria rallies and Trump is selling out arenas. Well, it's even more so the momentum has grown in President Trump's direction, and the motivation is getting even more so because of how badly Democrats are acting and how all of their operatives and all of their fellow travelers on the ground level are acting. So whereas I see and feel even more of what I saw and felt before 2016, it is just one of those things where, you know, just like with the Yankees, I don't like gloating until it's all over, because until November 6th comes around and everybody gets off their ass and goes and does their civic duty in voting, you can't really say anything. You got to play the game. Can't just, you know.
Yeah, we're like exactly 1 month away.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I want to get into some of the nitty gritty about some of the stuff that's come out on the Ford debacle with you.
Okay.
So here's the thing. We had Ford, who testified that she wrote the letter, right? The letter that she wrote to Feinstein and or to whoever, from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. She was asked by Rachel Mitchell, you know, what she was doing, who told her to reach out to the New York Times, who told her to write the. She was in Rehoboth, Delaware at the time. So a bunch of internet sleuths went to work on this McLean woman, because the McLean woman came out in a letter that was sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee under penalty of perjury by Christine Ford's ex-boyfriend, whose name was redacted until the media decided to figure out who he was. And he wrote this letter, we know, before the hearing was called, because Rachel Mitchell asked Ford questions like, did you ever coach anyone on how to take a polygraph? And everyone was kind of looking around saying, what the hell is she asking that question for? Right.
Interesting. I love this story. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah. So we know that because she asked that question, we know now that she had the letter from this ex-boyfriend who was with Christine Ford for 10 full years. They had like sort of a quasi long distance relationship. He said a lot of things in there. He said he doesn't want to be involved in all this, but he has to come forward and sign his name to something like this because it's lies. Number one, she was riding in a propeller plane with him and they took tons of vacations. She never, ever once expressed a fear of flying. Number two, she actually lived in a very, very small 500 square foot apartment during their time together. That would kind of erase the claustrophobia. I can't be in tight spaces nonsense that we got. Three, she said that he said that she was the reason why they broke up ultimately was because of infidelity. Mm-hmm. Which kind of speaks to her character in terms of men, right? Four, yep. He said that she'd never mentioned a peep or a word about any kind of sexual misconduct or assault or anything in her life to him in the full 10 years they were together. It's not
never
like
a Kavanaugh, period.
Right. Never mentioned him either. Not a word about it. And then the last thing that I found really interesting. Oh, there's two more. One, he said that she helped to coach a long time, lifelong friend on how to take a polygraph because she was going to be polygraphed for the FBI to be a U.S. attorney. And her name was McLean.
Monica McLean. And she worked for the FBI up until 2016.
Oh, yes. And we're going to get into that a lot more in depth in a second. And the last thing that was on there that I thought was really interesting is that they had shared a credit card and he had taken her off the credit card and she continued to use the credit card. And then he realized it months later when like auditing some statements and was going to actually press charges against her for continuing to use the card unbeknownst to him. So she's a thief, too. Allegedly.
I hated her. It's all about faces, and I hated her face from the get-go.
Why?
I told you, I hated her. Before I knew her little fake quivering voice, her shrieky, gurgly voice, I told you it was the sunglasses. I hated her stupid sunglasses.
Listen, I don't know what it is about you and being able to pick things out off of people's appearances, but you're pretty, pretty on target so far.
Oh, yeah. Cohen.
This idiot. Who else was it? It was Cohen. It was obviously Stelter.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, I mean, just come on. I mean, he's got the face of, you know, you ever see the tabloid magazine with the Bat Boy found in a cave? He looked like Bat Boy with the oval face and the screwed up teeth.
You know who he looks like to me? George Costanza.
Huh. Yeah. Costanza had a little bit more class, though.
You think so?
Yeah. You know, eating out of the garbage, sneaking food during sex.
Oh, my gosh. Poisoning his wife.
Yeah. Well, that was accidental, though.
That's what they say. Dun, dun, dun. Where's the soundboard?
Oh, God.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, so McLean comes up. McLean pops up. And then we realize who's the only person sitting behind Ford at this hearing from a support standpoint? In quotes, McLean.
Yep.
There's a meme floating around. It's Brett Kavanaugh testifying, reading a statement. There's no one around him anywhere, you know, trying to help him, right? And then there's a picture of her, and there's like 20 attorneys and like people whispering in her ear and trying to get her to sit.
Yeah, she's a puppet.
Yes.
I mean, she's a marionette, and each one of her lawyers has one of the strings. I mean, she had to be carefully delivered through this process because, I mean, it's not only just her life that's on the line, but she is holding all of the marbles for the Senate Democrats who knew that this was a really, really shaky last minute bet that they had to wager, but they had no other choice.
Yeah.
They had the choice.
Yeah, no, agreed, 100%. They didn't have a choice. They had nothing else that they could possibly do, and it's backfiring in their faces. We'll talk about that in a second, too. So she's back there. You know, we know now from corroborating the testimony with this woman where she, you know, where she was friends with her entire life. She was working for the FBI. Actually, the person that she was a spokesperson for the FBI, she transferred to the Southern District of New York. Where she worked, and everything on the internet about this woman after 2010 is gone. But we were able to find out what she was basically doing between then and now. And then in 2016, she retires after 24 years. The gentleman that she was kind of, you know, hanging around with is a, and Jeff at the Markets Work did a great article on this. I'll put in the show notes for everybody to see. It's the unexpected background, FBI background of Christine Ford's friend. And the person she kind of like worked in tandem with very often was one of, you're going to recognize the name because I recognize the name, Jim Margolin. Do you recognize that name?
No, I don't.
Okay. Jim Margolin was basically involved in the Prevezin case and he and the Michael Cohen case. Prevezin was the one who sent Veselnitskaya.
Yeah.
And Baker Hostetler hired Fusion GPS. And then the whole dossier thing happened. And then U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara of the SDNY granted Veselnitskaya the permission to come in. So remember, she was on the FBI until 2016. She also was in the Southern District of New York FBI office. What else was there during that time? The Wiener laptop.
What was during which time? Well, during the summer of 2016?
Yeah, up until when she retired in 2016, the Wiener laptop case was being handled out of the Southern District.
That's right. And also, we know that as far as timeline goes, I mean, the Prevezin case and all that was going on in New York, which was the reason why Veselnitskaya was in town, also opened up the door for the Trump Tower meeting to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was all that's why she was in town, because of the Prevezin case. So everybody was killing a bunch of birds with one stone, or trying to at least. Some birds came back to life.
I'm just really. And then there was also this weird death in connection with Veselnitskaya over the past day or so of. Yeah, really crazy. Things are getting crazy. So basically, you know, while there's no like, look, there's no mention of her name in connection to the Wiener laptop. There's no mention of her name, and because everything's gone. So I'm just making, you know, informed speculative thoughts here. But you can't deny that this is a very, very odd coincidence. And then we find out that not only was that involvement there, she was a lifelong friend who allegedly, or under penalty of perjury, an ex-boyfriend says, Ford coached her through her polygraphs after denying that would ever happen. She spends a lot of time with that with this McLean woman, right?
Yep.
It comes out in the news that McLean was pressuring and basically tampering with Leland, the friend, who was at the party, in quotes, who wasn't really at the party because she says she wasn't, on how to respond and say, you need to clarify that you didn't know any of this stuff, because they basically wanted her to lie.
Can you go into this a little bit? Because I was seeing this popping up on a number of my my feeds today.
Yes.
And I've been looking all around for it. And I just saw the SGT report. I see this this one headline: Leland Kaiser issues statement in first public appearance. Quote, did not corroborate Ford's story. Quote, completely blindsided. Quote, Ford threw her under the bus. That is from one of her close family members or friends or something. But so I know that the Leland Kaiser thing is falling apart at the seams in itself. That is just one little portion of an overall disaster that is this this Christine Ford story. But can you go into what we know?
Yes. When she was re-questioned again by the FBI in the background investigation, when she was questioned, I guess she was questioned for the first time in regards. Yes.
Okay.
She made the statement to the FBI, I felt really pressured to change what I was saying because of, and showed, apparently she showed texts that were sent. Yeah. So Mrs. Kaiser's lawyer on September 23rd said in a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee that she had no recollection of attending a party with Judge Kavanaugh, whom she said she didn't know. The same day, she told the Washington Post she believed Dr. Ford. And then 2 days after Ford and Judge testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Mrs. Kaiser's attorney sent a letter to the panel saying his client wasn't refuting her account. During the FBI investigation, she basically says that I was pressured to change my statement. And if you remember back to by McLean, And if you remember back to during when she was asked about Leland specifically, what was Ford's response? She's having some health problems, and I hope that...
What was that answer? But yeah, absolutely.
Basically trying to say either she's crazy or, like, I don't know.
Well, but you know, and you say basically, because you have to, we even need to speculate what she even meant by that response when she said that she doesn't, that Leland does not corroborate her claims, that she never even met Brett Kavanaugh. She, Ford responds with, well, she's dealing with some serious health issues, and I'm glad she's taking time to take care of that. What the hell? I mean, like, seriously, I mean, I don't even know what the hell that response means. You have to speculate, I mean, over everything.
Yeah.
What mean?
Yeah, and you know that the Senate Judiciary Committee, at least on the R side, have a lot more information. And we know that also because yesterday Grassley released a letter to Ford's attorneys. He's been arguing back and forth with them, like, look, give us the underlying results of the polygraph, all the background data. You must give us the therapist notes, which you told... that which the Washington Post reported that you had already given them. So there's no privacy concern. You'd given them to the media. And also all the communications with the Washington Post that Dr. Ford has relied upon as evidence, and also records or descriptions of direct or indirect communications between Dr. Ford or her representatives and any of the following. One, U.S. senators or their staffs, particularly the offices of Senators Feinstein and Hirono, other than the communications that were made with them in preparation for the hearing. So he's basically saying, you guys have been talking to them and we want to see it.
Yeah.
And then he also wants the alleged witnesses identified by Dr. Ford, Leland Kaiser, Mark Judge, and Patrick P.J. Smith, and any communications with Debbie Ramirez, Julie Swetnick, or their representatives. In other words, it appears as though they are identifying a massive conspiracy, all circling around these attorneys.
Well, not only that, but I would love to hear a little bit more of confirmation, or at least a conclusion on what had been suggested in a week or so, probably last Wednesday, where it was suggested that there are emails of Christine Ford freaking out, knowing that, you know, this is all nonsense and, you know, how are we going to get through this? And not only that, but there's been numerous rumors about there being a Gorsuch letter as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, those, I can't wait to see. What are we going to see? Are we going to see anything? I mean, and again, we're waiting for half the country to be arrested right now. So,
yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that too in the second half here in a second. But yeah, we need to, I mean, I don't know, somebody needs to listen. There needs to be accountability. I really feel it. You know, we get close, and then it stops. And it's like, you know, we're reading these cryptic letters and we know they know something. And it's just a big game of chess. I'm getting sick and tired of it, actually. I really am.
You know how sick and tired I'm getting? You brought up that Maisie Hirono person.
Yeah.
First of all, before all of this, I didn't even know who the hell she was. And then, you know, she starts telling all the men in the country to shut up. And now it's such a horrible thing, because I have friends now, and I know I have viewers and stuff in Hawaii. But because of people like her, I last week I remember sitting there and just stewing in my seat, watching all this stuff going. I wasn't on air, but I was just talking to myself. I'm like, you know what? Who the hell is this woman? And you know what? What the hell is Hawaii? Well, why does Hawaii even have a say in any of this stuff? Why don't they just stay the hell out of the mainland issues? They're not really a state. They're 5,000 miles away in the middle of the ocean. They shouldn't even be a state. And I started coming down on the actual state of Hawaii because of this woman. I'm like, you know, I have to collect myself. I have to collect myself here.
We have a couple things to do here in regards to this case still, but I want to take a couple seconds to say something while Frank collects himself, and maybe this will make him feel better. I'm going officially on record here and just letting everyone out there know, men, I love you. I think you're wonderful. I respect you. I think that you have just as much value in society as women do. I think you are an integral part and play a very, very crucial role in your own way, different from that of a woman. in the advancement of our culture. I think that for the most part, you're all very respectful. I appreciate it when you compliment me on something that I'm wearing, or if you like my hair, that doesn't bother me. I love it when you open up the door for me. That makes me feel special, not underprivileged. I want you to know, on behalf of many women, that we do love and respect you, men.
Well, that's good to hear.
I think I speak for many, honestly. I do. Before we go on, though, Frank, let's talk for a second about Vivid Seats, which I think you're going to be using, correct?
I need to, especially if we have some. The one thing I haven't seen yet is a World Series game. I've been to every level of the playoffs, but that's the World Series. I would love to get some World Series tickets.
Well, we all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite entitled baseball team play in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite band. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to, and you can sort by price, or you can look for seats in the section and row of your choice. And to make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats to save even more money watching the entitled Yankees play. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
I'm all down for that, and I think this is the greatest time. Playoff time is the greatest time to go out there and bargain shopping on some of the greatest events that there are to attend. So yeah. Hats off.
Yeah, Vivid Seats. It's great. Listen, I wanted to get into this doxer. Do you want to talk about the doxer?
Oh, sure.
Because I think this is like one of the most dangerous things you can do to somebody, especially in that position with all the crazy hysteria we've seen from these uncivilized nutcases on Capitol Hill. Like, oh, let's talk about Amy Schumer for a second, can we?
If we have to, okay.
So outside, didn't you get famous off of Amy Schumer?
Well, it's probably the most watched video clip I've ever put out, ironically. But yeah.
How many views does it have? Do you know? It has a lot of views on it.
Last time I checked, and that was months and months ago, it had broken the 500,000 views mark. And I think it brought in maybe about close to 2,000 subscribers.
Wow. Quite
yeah.
Frankly, Amy Schumer.
Yeah, well, nothing else has worked since then. I don't get subscribers off of the work I do every night. I get subscribers when I get endorsements. That's it. So I'm like in my own little corner with my dunce cap on.
I was going to try and pull it up and see what views it had, but I don't see it. What'd you call it?
Oh, I think it's like Netflix. It was when Netflix got rid of the star system because everybody was destroying Amy Schumer's horrible leather special.
Okay, I'll find it. It's a lot of views. It's like a lot of views. But anyway, Amy Schumer, who is related to Chucky Boy, is in D.C. yesterday. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but when you get a permit, if you do get a permit for an event, on the permit, it says any civil disobedience planned, and you check it off, and then you say any arrests necessary, and you can check it off.
The microphone.
What is that all about? Was that me?
No, it was me.
Oh, okay. So you can check off whether or not you want to be arrested in a sign of civil disobedience. So, of course, yesterday there's video of an officer going up to Amy Schumer and some other girl. I don't even know who she is that has like a million and a half Twitter followers. I've never heard of her before. And they ask her, do you want to be arrested? And she's like, yes, please.
Oh, it's almost like, do you want to receive the Eucharist?
I mean,
These people, I'm telling you, everything they do is religious, and it makes me so sick to my stomach.
So she gets arrested, and then, you know, the two of them like, we got arrested yesterday, been protesting Kavanaugh. No, you asked to be arrested. It's a...
Please arrest me so I can tell my grandchildren I did something for the advancement of communism.
Oh, Lord. It was horrible to see. I'm like, you're such a phony. What a phony. It's just annoying.
I was there when we were trying to advance Stalinism in the U.S. I was there. I was on the ground. I got arrested with my fellow Stalinists.
I don't want to see Amy Schumer in 50 years.
God, she's one of those people that tries to get as naked as possible in front of crowds to show how sure of herself she is, even though she's, you know.
Listen, people that are sure of themselves typically don't have to act that way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, she buys and steals jokes too. She's worthless.
I know. I've seen that. She does steal jokes. I've seen that.
She's worthless.
Yeah. So they get arrested yesterday. And then we have, that was in the protester scheme. And then we have this. We had on Wikipedia, we had a doxing event of like five GOP senators during this Kavanaugh debacle. Again, I keep saying debacle because that's what it is. And they were able, there's some Twitter AI bot or something on Twitter that monitors the Wikipedia pages or anything that comes out of Congress. Like from an IP address standpoint, I guess. And when something gets edited, it tweets it out automatically to keep up on breaking news or something, like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it tweets out that these entries were made to the Wikipedia pages of these Senate staffer or these senators. And it turns out that it's their personal information, their home addresses and cell phone numbers. Holy moly. I mean, how much more dangerous can you get in today's climate than to dox somebody online like that? So the Wikipedia acted quickly and took it down and removed the edit history on it. But they were able to, a day and a half ago or so, arrest somebody because they had originally blamed the wrong person. And it was coming from Jackson Lee's office. Jackson Lee was the one who slipped that envelope to Kavanaugh, Ford's attorneys. Remember?
Yes.
But it wasn't her. It wasn't her and her staff. It was this dude named
Costco.
Jackson is his first name. Jackson Costco. He recently worked for Sheila Jackson Lee. He was arrested for allegedly posting the personal information of Graham, Lee, Hatch, with information such as their home addresses and phone numbers. According to a sworn statement by Capitol Police Captain Jason Bell, a witness Tuesday saw Costco at a computer in a senator's office where he used to work a day after two unnamed senators' information had been put up on Wikipedia. So I guess he did it again. Costco worked for other Democratic senators, including Feinstein, Maggie Hassan, and former Senator Barbara Boxer. While earlier reports identified him as an intern for Jackson Lee, his lawyer said he was working as a fellow in her office, paid by an outside institution. Sources familiar with the case tell Fox News that Costco was in Senator Hassan's office, where he was not authorized to be, and he was caught using a login he was not authorized to use. Costco earlier was let go by Senator Hassan's office, and a spokesman for Hassan says she strongly denounces the alleged actions. Whatever.
Yeah, strongly denounces. Wasn't there actually some more that was being held back to actually, because he got charged with witness tampering or something like that. I think he was threatening to release the private medical information of the children of these members of Congress too, if anybody tried to mess with them and out them.
Yeah, I'm about to. Yeah, that's next in the article, and it's crazy because how did he get that crap? That's my first question. That's scary. According to Bell's statement, who's the officer, Costco is alleged to have been confronted by the staffer and then walked out. The staffer called police. Hours later, the witness received an email from LiveFree or PWN at gmail.com saying, if you tell anyone, I will leak it all. Emails, signal conversations, Gmails, senators' children's health information, and socials. Socials apparently referred to social security numbers, while Signal is a secure messaging app. Not so secure, I guess. Bell said there was probably cause to believe that Costco published the information of senators and then made threatening statements directed to the unnamed witness with the intent to hinder, delay, or prevent the witness from reporting it. And the attorney for Brian Brian Stoller's... Oh. Costco's defense attorney, Brian Stoller, told Fox News his client acted alone. We all need to take a deep breath. In this political climate, everyone wants to jump to conclusions. We need to put the conspiracy theories aside and focus on the allegations. Jackson is innocent until proven guilty.
Oh, wow. Wow. Nice. Nice.
Oh, that's great. He's charged with publishing restricted personal information, threats in interstate communication, unauthorized access of a government computer, identity theft, witness tampering, second degree burglary, and unlawful entry. I wonder if he was one of the people that tampered with the Kavanaugh folks.
I mean, listen, here's what we have to realize here. We're dealing with a group of people that are all tied in together with actions such as the mailing of ricin to the White House and to the Pentagon. That storm elevators, people of Congress, elected members of Congress, they storm elevators and they storm offices and they barricade people in. They protest free speech on college campuses. They destroy private property. They are involved in doxing. They're involved in leaking of classified information. They are spying. They engage in regular character assassination. They are engaged in and they willfully put themselves into positions to perjure themselves. They are chasing people out of restaurants and gas stations. And I mean, what
this
do you expect?
It sounds so horrible.
But it's all true.
I know.
You need to put it into perspective to realize what's going on here. Not only that, never forget about Project Veritas is showing people about the real contingent of Democratic Socialists of America who have burrowed themselves in our federal government because they know it's impossible to be fired. And they do socialist work all throughout the day on federal dime, and they pass each other information that they're not supposed to have. These are the coffee house socialist lunatics that have actually made themselves a home inside of our federal government, and it's playing out in so many ways inside and out. Everything that Joe McCarthy said was right. I'm sorry, I have to keep bringing it up. Everything Joe McCarthy said was right. Only thing now is that the animals are cornered and they have nothing left to do but to endorse chaos and violence. And I mean, they're coming after it in every way, shape, or form, whether it be identity theft or whether it be actually physical intimidation.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's scary. To even hear that is scary.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. But that's where we're at. And as long as it is all put together and people understand, as long as people understand what they're watching and how it's all related, then it becomes a little bit more easy what you have to do as a citizen of a free nation. You have to make sure that all of these crooks are left behind in the dustbin of history and have no power. And the government, and this is another thing too, this is not about, okay, well, let's get them out of government and let's make sure that we have good people and people we can trust in. No, because in 15 years the same thing is going to happen again. Government needs to be completely strapped down and sized down. I know that we employ millions of people around the country through the federal government. I know a lot of people are going to have to find new employment opportunities, but you know what? We have a booming private sector, and if we stay off of the backs, if we don't weigh down the little people of the country who actually want to put their ideas and their aspirations to use, and they actually want to make something of themselves and create businesses that create jobs for people that can stick around a lot longer than a bloated, can't move fast enough federal government, then everybody's going to be all right in the end. But this needs to stop.
There are sometimes where you say things and there's nothing to say. Like, there's nothing to even add to it. That was perfect. It's true. I'm passionate. Because it's like that serious. It's like listening to you read off all the things that the Democrats are actually literally doing. They're like terrorists.
It is terrorism because it all has. Think about it. What is the what is the dictionary definition of terrorism? You're talking about acts of violence or intimidation that it leads us to a political to affect a political ends. It's all about political influence. It's not just random acts of violence. Terrorism has a political edge to it.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's domestic terrorism.
Really, it is.
The one thing that people need to stop doing in the media is saying, this is borderline something. This is borderline treason. This is borderline terrorism. No, it's not borderline anything. We are in the deep end.
Goodness. Which brings us to Spygate.
Yep.
So this has kind of been going on behind the scenes for a little while now. There's been a lot of kind of stuff like festering that is going on while the Kavanaugh stuff's happening. You're not hearing much about. But the other day, James Baker, who was the former counsel for the FBI, made his way over and sat down to testify in front of the committee about FISA abuse and apparently let a lot of bombshells go. One of which being that a lawyer, an attorney for Perkins Coie on behalf of the Clinton campaign named Sussman, was talking to the FBI and giving them information that they then used to start their investigation and continue their investigation into President Trump or into Papadopoulos and whatever. Literally, this is what happened. Like, Hillary Clinton hired Perkins Coie, who then hired Fusion GPS to hire Christopher Steele to write the dossier. The Christopher Steele is handing the dossier to the FBI at the same time as a lawyer for Perkins Coie is also handing supposed intelligence to the FBI in regards to all of that. And you know, interestingly enough, there is some research out there that shows that this guy was actually responsible for bringing in CrowdStrike to the DNC.
Hmm.
So he was in charge of the whole, like, he was also working on the DNC hack at the same time as he's passing information about the Spygate scenario to the FBI. Can you imagine if it was the Republicans that did that?
You know what kills me? While all this is going on, while our Senate and House committees are scratching, they are scratching and clawing for any bit of information that they can put together and conduct their own investigations. And they up until recently, they have been largely stonewalled. And what are we looking at with what's Robert Mueller doing? He's trying to get interviews and piece together information on Roger Stone. Now, I mean, think about that. Think about that. You have a special counsel that has been put together to investigate possible ties or what the hell was going on around the time of the election and follow the evidence wherever it may lead you. And he's talking to people like Roger Stone, and he's going after Paul Manafort for activity that half of Washington, D.C. is involved in every day. And meanwhile, the pieces that are being put together elsewhere is just unbelievable.
What's interesting to me about the Roger Stone thing, as you said, is that Roger Stone was floated as Dan Bongino. Supposedly five members of the Trump campaign team were literally digitally recorded by an inside source of some kind. So like when Trump says he was recorded, apparently that actually did happen outside of incidental collection, meaning emails and stuff like that. He was actually recorded by somebody with a record, like somebody sitting there, like Papadopoulos alleges that Downer recorded him with his phone. Same thing is being apparently that's what Baker said. They had recordings. And so Roger Stone was floated around to be one of those guys that was recorded. So if you go by like the Dan Bongino mainstream-ish sort of like thought about Mueller, it makes sense that he would be going after Stone to squash that from coming out.
And then you have James Comey, who's his memorialized scribblings that had nothing in them was the reason why Robert Mueller even has a job right now at the DOJ. And he is one of the most isolated men in the country. And all of his friends and all of their colleagues are going down one by one, and they're giving testimony behind closed doors that is certainly going to end up hanging James Comey himself. And still, Robert Mueller is just, I mean, just kicking around, whatever the hell he wants to do. It's infuriating. I want to punch everybody.
It is infuriating, only because James Comey wants an open hearing, and he only wants an open hearing so he doesn't have to talk about the stuff that he is going to be asked about, because if he's asked about it in an open hearing, he's not going to be allowed to talk about it. And there's another interesting little tidbit that's going to come into play here. The Uranium One John Solomon piece that comes into this.
This I have no clue, so it's all you.
Okay, so John Solomon, as you know, we've covered John Solomon on this show in depth. And his reporting. And actually, I found there's like this whistleblowers association that Michael Horowitz spoke at a couple weeks ago. Michael Horowitz spoke there about like the importance of the IG in assisting whistleblowers and protecting them, because without them, like IGs don't really, they're really a crucial part to what the inspector general does. And so Horowitz was there. And then I subscribed to the channel because I just found it really interesting. And I saw John Solomon being interviewed by or speaking at one of their events, but like 10 years ago. And John Solomon has had a really, really amazing career. And I think a lot of people should look into his history and what he's done. He's been an investigative journalist, an acclaimed one, for a very, very long time. And so everything that, like, I always thought this about him, but now after hearing that interview and looking at him from a different light a little bit, it's even more telling when he comes out with stories like this, because it seems to me that he has been dripping out the Spygate story over a period of weeks and months as he's been, like, I guess, getting the okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we've talked about it. Like,
yeah, he's definitely on the receiving end of a very interesting stream of information.
Yeah, and also getting the okay to say things at certain times, and who his sources are is really amazing too. Like, we've dissected that as well. So the other day, on top of his James Baker article that he came out with, he came out with a FOIA. There was a FOIA release, 37 secret pages of memos about Russia, the Clintons, and Uranium One. And basically in the article, what he says is that they don't release anything of substance or value to the people. And he's saying it's really, very, very, very unfortunate that they're withholding these documents, especially when we have that whistleblower that came forward to talk to DeGeneva and his wife about what he witnessed while he was inside the FBI in regards to Uranium One. And we know that Uranium One encompasses Rod Rosenstein, Mueller, Clinton, all of it. So what in the grand scheme, what John Solomon is basically saying is that, well, he was the first reporter that disclosed William Douglas Campbell in the first place, who basically burrowed his way inside of Putin's Rosatom, posing as a consultant, but he was an FBI informant. And then they were able to still somehow, through CFIUS, after knowing this and this guy trying to come forward, push through the Uranium One deal through CFIUS. And Solomon's saying that's bad no matter what. It's bad if the CFIUS members didn't know that this was all happening and it was held from them. And it's even worse if they did know all of the stuff that was going on inside Rosatom and everything else from that this informant, and they didn't help him.
Mm.
And they didn't stop it. And he says at the end something really curious, where he says they're about to release all of these documents and declassify the documents for FISA and all of that stuff. Why not just throw in the Uranium One documents into that?
I would love any movement on this front. So many times I'll get messages from people saying, hey, you know, I really think that they're going to let this slide. I really think that they're nothing's going to come around. The A1 situation, both of those situations, Uranium One and Imran A1, those are two stories that I would really, really like to hold out some hope that they're not going to be left to rot. Yeah, dustbin.
What do you think about the fact that the Iran deal and Uranium One are connected?
I don't know.
I've seen
the case being made. I don't remember what's been going on because I've been concentrating on so many other things. But I would love to read back into it.
I'm just speculating, and I'm not a scholar on either of the two. More so the Iran deal than the Uranium One deal, believe it or not. But I'm just thinking, you know, the allegiance between the two of them in terms of energy and blah blah blah, and then the Iran deal. I just feel like this is one of the things, and I feel like the reason why Solomon is tying this to the release on FISA Gate, on FISA stuff, is because they're so closely connected in that these are the huge scandals that were detrimental to the country and done without thinking about the country's well-being, that the people behind these deals, the tyrants, so to speak, want to keep hidden. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, it almost feels like these were motivating factors in every other action that was taken outside of the fact that Donald Trump was an outsider. And then I want to leave this here because we could go on and on and on about it, unless you have any questions.
No, I don't. I'm like I said, on this issue, I just wanted to learn a little bit more, because when you told me we were going to talk about it, I had no background information.
It's basically, like I said, like the CFIUS thing. Like, did they know? Like, he says, Solomon says, one former U.S. official who had access to the evidence shared with CFIUS during the Uranium One deal said this, quote, "There's definitely material that would be illuminating to the issues that have been raised. Somebody should fight to make it public." And then Solomon says that somebody could be President Trump, who could add these 37 pages of now secret documents to his declassification order he's considering in the Russia case. Why?
That is that? The question.
It's just a weird thing to piggyback it onto. That's all.
Yeah.
Do it separate. Yeah, it's like the JFK stuff.
What will be given to us as a Christmas gift this year? I need holiday gifts of real cosmic substance. That's what I want.
Have Gadget Doc on.
Yeah. No, he's already been telling me. A proclamation. I said that if things go well on November 6th, I will pray at least a portion of the rosary every day for the first time since grammar school. I will do that. He's been trying to keep me honest on it. He's like, hey, listen, the mother doesn't like that. If you say you're going to do something, you don't do it. I said, well, what? So now he's on me this. Now I have to just start praying the rosary, I guess.
Yeah, but didn't you have like a bad story about the rosary in you?
No, I didn't have the bad story about the rosary. Oh, wait. I think I forgot how to pray it at one point.
Weren't you like...
I was drunk.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I was drunk. Oh, and best, since it's actually topical these days, I was drunk in high school. Yes, it was after a victory party of the local football team. I wasn't part of the. I didn't go to the local public school, but all my friends were there, so I would still go to all the victory parties there.
They had parties.
Yeah, I drank about like a. I sipped all throughout the night a bottle of Blackberry Blackhouse. Oh God, I was young. I didn't know. But in either case, I was sipping on that all night. And then until finally I realized that, you know, a good portion of the bottle was gone, and I missed my ride home. So I walked home. I said, you know what? I should just walk anyway. It was only a couple of miles. It was a nice night. And I figured I needed to soak up a little bit before my mother killed me.
Wait a second. But you remember that.
Yeah, so I remember everything. No blacking out for me. But on the stretch home, this is probably like the last half mile home, is when I realized I was not getting any more sober. And I started saying Hail Marys, because I really did not want to get destroyed by my mother. And so I'm praying to one mother to save me from the other. And I started screwing up the prayer. And then I said, oh, no. Oh, no. Now
you're done for.
Now Mary's mad at me. Like, everybody was. I said, this is bad. And yeah, my mother, she knew something was up. And then she really knew something was up once I started puking. And then she started yelling at me through the bathroom door.
If my son in high school or daughter in high school came home puking because they were drunk, I would be so scared. I would be so scared that they were going to die of like alcohol poisoning or something. I would be freaking out over it. I would take them to the hospital.
Well, if they came home and they actually walked through the door, and they were on their feet, and you know, maybe they're slurring a little bit and they're stumbling a little bit, and they just end up throwing up because they got a weak stomach. Fine, but you could tell if somebody's going down from alcohol poisoning. I mean, they're like near comatose.
I would still be worried. I don't know.
Oh well, yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a parent yet, so I guess I
love how you said yet. Yay!
Oh, we'll see.
Woo-hoo.
It would be fun. It's definitely something I'd love to do.
It is fun, especially when they get old enough to start playing sports. Like every single day of the week, I have something to do with my kids in the afternoon. Like they're playing fall ball. Let me just quickly 57 minutes. Helga, okay, listen. Helga has never picked up a bat in her life. This is the first season she's playing softball ever. The girl looks like a pro. It is the most miraculous thing I've ever seen in my entire life, ever. She can hit. She can field. She has an arm like a cannon. I'm going to send you some video of Helga, Frankie.
Hey, let me know. Like I said, this next year, 2019, is going to be my 13th year coaching youth baseball.
Yeah.
And I coach boys and girls. So, yeah, trust me, if I ever had a child, I'd love to teach them how to throw. That'd be awesome.
I have so much fun at every game. Like, I have so much fun at every practice. I really do. I love watching my kids play sports. They love it, both of them. They absolutely love it. I have such a ball. It's fun to cheer for them. I never thought that would be me. I never thought I would be that mom, but I am. And that's why I shared this thing last night before we wrap it for the week. I shared a thing from, I think it was like Christian Moms of America or something. It was Christian or Catholic. Well, let me find what it was. Catholic Vote. And now I don't usually share religious stuff and everything, even though I have my own beliefs or whatever. It was a video, Moms Support Kavanaugh. And it was like a 1 minute and 13 second video of moms with their sons as they grow up. And I was crying my eyes out at the end because it's just like, it's the most ridiculous. It's crazy to think, like, if this happened to my son, how I would feel.
Yeah. No, I understand. Oh. I understand, but then again, I don't.
Well, not yet, anyway.
Yeah, we'll see. Like I said.
Well, thank you guys for joining us for another episode of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Let's go Yankees!
And beans.
You know, this time next week, we're going to have a lot... this time next week, we're going to have a lot of answers.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
It's going to be great. I mean, if we did another podcast on Sunday, we would have a lot of answers probably.
I know, we would. The 12th will be our next show, and it will be glorious. And you can find it on Google Play, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. Join us next week where we have all of the answers and lots more questions. You're going to say goodbye?
I am. And just so you know, this just came in from the Hill. GOP confident that Susan Collins will back Kavanaugh in the final vote.
Well, that's good. We'll find out more.
We'll see. Yes. All right. No, that's all for me, though. I had a great time tonight. I hope you did, too.
Yeah, I did. Talk to you soon.
Good night.
Bye, guys.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
You got to manage you. You can't rely on someone to come in and tell you exactly what to do. Always give you a pat on the back. And the reason may be that the manager has challenges. He might be on the hot seat, or your boss may be on the bubble of losing his job, or the boss may have challenges in their own personal life that unfortunately they brought to work, they brought it to the field, and you don't have a clue. So he's in a really bad, negative mood. It's got nothing to do with you. It's got nothing to do with baseball. It has everything to do with he's going through a divorce or the loss of a child or a kid not doing well in school. There's a myriad bunch of reasons why your boss isn't always just kumbaya, Ryan, you're the best, you can do it. And I think we need to be prepared for that, prepared for the unexpected, prepared for not getting positive feedback.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.